week is Budget Week, and in a highly unusual turn of events, the new Treasury Minister's only been in the job for 4 weeks. So how did we get to this point, and what is so different about the budget now compared to the one that was planned a month ago? I'm Amy Griffiths, and on this episode of Island Life, I'm going to be taking a look at how we got to this point and finding out a bit more about what the final budget of this administration will mean for us. Now,
take it away, Andy. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
That's right, this road to the 2026 budget has been a bumpy one. I'm going to start off, though, by just providing a bit of context to this situation. One of the sectors we always hear has been hardest hit since COVID and the rise of online shopping is retail. So, in the run-up to Christmas, I wanted to find out what the picture was like across the island. I decided to hit every compass point, and this is what I found out. On a beautiful, sunny, wintry morning, I took a stroll along Parliament Street, and I have to admit, I was expecting to hear more stories of doom, gloom, and hardship from the retailers. But I was pleasantly surprised when the overwhelming majority of businesses I spoke to were incredibly positive. I started at Oogie's and Metitech in St Paul's Square, which opened there earlier this year, and spoke to Lauren and Tim Metcalf.
It's really picked up well, yeah. People are very interested. We've got a lot of very strange and odd eclectic gifts about, and people seem to have responded quite well to them. Considering we're in St Paul's Square, which can be a quieter area, we have somehow managed to attract people to us, so we're quite happy about that.
It's good that we're trying to beat internet prices as well and be competitive with the internet prices.
Because how much of a challenge is it to do that in a world where everyone's online shopping?
It's not easy, but it is possible. We've managed to do it. It's just keeping in touch with our wholesalers, trying to basically just stay exactly the same prices online so that people can just come in here, try things on, and then leave with them rather than having to wait and then buy the wrong size.
So then when it comes to Ramsey, why was it that you chose to open your shop here?
Well, we're based in the north, and my parents had a business in Ramsey for a long time, and we moved over here in the 80s, so I'm used to Ramsey. As well as that, it's where all the indie businesses seem to be all gathering together, and we feel like we fit in and complement them quite well.
What has trade been like since you've opened generally?
Honestly, we can't complain. We've had quite a good response to Oogie's. We've really enjoyed it, and people seem to be finding us every day. More and more people coming in, they find us via Facebook, TikTok, or just simply by walking past and being interested.
Are you hopeful that, you know, you're going to be getting a lot of trade through your doors then?
Fingers crossed. I mean, yeah, of course I'm hopeful. I think everybody is. Yeah, we're very hopeful.
Meanwhile, another business owner told me their trade plummeted during October while the mountain road was closed for roadworks. And that was something backed up by Claire Hewitson, who runs Chalet on Parliament Street. Although she told me that overall, business has been good.
It's picked up the last couple of weeks, I would say. It's been quite a slow start. I think all through the year, it's been quite hard for people. It's made harder with the mountain road being closed so much. It seems to be closed more often than it's open. But people that come into Chalet, there was a lady just been in and she said, I always come in here because I can find something different that other shops don't have.
And lots of people I've spoken to in Ramsey so far have said the business has actually been good, or it's certainly picking up. And what do you think it is about Ramsey that is encouraging that in a world where constantly hearing headlines like the high street's dying?
I think a lot of shops here are independent shops. And we all try and do something different. We don't like to tread on each other's toes. And we'll always, if they can't find something in here, I'll say you might be able to find it in this or that shop. So I think we help each other out too, which is really nice. It's sort of a community spirit.
So maybe that's Ramsey's secret. In a world that seems to revolve around convenience, Ramsey is taking a firm stance by not only creating its own identity, but proudly and defiantly standing by it. And it seems to be working. Now, I do need to declare my interest here because I was raised in Peel and firmly consider myself to be a Peel gal. And for that reason, I was desperate to be able to do a report that could sing about how wonderfully Peel is doing. Sadly, though, that doesn't seem to be the reality. Every single trader I spoke to on Michael Street seemed to echo the challenges of the high street that we've long been reporting. Even some of Peel's few remaining stalwarts say times are tough. Ian Mitchell runs Mitchell's News Agents, which has been on Michael Street forever. But even he says it's getting harder to compete with the online market.
Because a lot of people go online shopping, you know, for the bigger variety of what they want.
And do you find that that's an issue to try and get through?
Oh, it is, yeah, it is very much so, yes, yeah.
What's Peel High Street like? And I suppose because you've been here for so long, how much has it changed in the time that you've been here?
Well, it has changed a lot with a lot of the shops closing and nobody taking new business on these days. But we keep pressing on, yeah. Keep pressing on.
So the message from you really is to go and support your local shop?
Everybody, yes, every time. Support the locals, please. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Another staple of Peel High Street is Celtic Gold, and Chris Walton from there told me what things are like for them.
Trade's been really good for us. It's super hard for new businesses to start in Michael Street. I don't think they get much support. It's not a very welcoming street. Also, there's just the financial situation at the moment for everyone is super, super hard. I think it's businesses that actually want to take the punt on Michael Street at the moment. You know, it's a big risk. The footfall's not what it is in Douglas. You're going to spend a lot of money until you get a name for yourself. It's really, really hard. Another issue is parking in Peel. You know, Peel is just not accessible to anybody and it's just not welcoming for anyone or families.
Parking, or lack thereof, is a theme that came up repeatedly on my stroll through the Sunset City. But it's not the only thing impacting businesses. Many I spoke to said the opening of not one, but two Tesco stores in Peel has been really damaging to their trade. And it was a concern shared by Jack Griffiths, who I swear is no relation, who opened GG Bakery last August.
The difficulties we have is inconsistency. We can have some days where it's flat out non-stop, other days where it's completely dead. So it's just the juggling of what hours we have and bits like that. So it's been okay. We do struggle with the bigger companies coming in and having feels like a monopoly over certain sales, which we do struggle with. But in a general, the community do support us. It's just getting every one of the communities to come and support us.
And what do you think would improve that and really make a difference for it?
I think, again, it's that saying of supporting local, and it is use it or lose it. And I don't think any of us want to get to that point where you walk down Michael Street and it is a complete ghost town. I mean, it's quiet at the moment, but what we don't want to see is every shop being empty and for nowhere to go. We'd like to support local, keep everything within our community, and then we can all benefit from it, really.
My tour of the island, I've been pleasantly surprised by Ramsay's successes, but sad to hear how challenging things seem to be for businesses in my hometown of Peel. But what's this festive period been like for traders in Douglas? Well, first of all, it was hard for me to actually find any independent traders because they're few and far between on Strand Street now. The general feeling, though, was that business has been okay. One thing the businesses often say is that footfall in the city centre is particularly low. And Lee Watson from Extreme Arts and Gadgets on Duke Street says it's something he's really noticed.
I'm taking a picture left and right in Duke Street. You can't see a soul. When you do see bags, they're shopping bags. You're not seeing many retail shop bags. I believe trends have changed. People are saying there's no money about. I think that's complete rubbish. There's plenty of money about. All you've got to do is look on Facebook and see how many people are going to Prague, Budapest, buying new mountain bikes, buying new cars. People would rather do stuff than have stuff. Now, this goes against the trend for me being a shop owner. Our shop is one of those shops that you want everything in here, but you don't need it. So when times are hard or you're prioritising, we're one of the first to suffer. In saying that, if we don't get the support from the local economy, there won't be any little shops like this. And you can see, Douglas, it's dying on its feet.
Another issue cropping up time and time again is parking. As we heard in Peel yesterday, Douglas isn't alone in its struggle, but almost all the businesses I spoke to raised it as a problem. Because if there's not enough parking, there's not enough footfall. And as one of the owners of the creative shop, Kieran Brown, told me, it's a problem that continually seems to fall on deaf ears.
Parking in Douglas is making things very, very difficult, amongst other things out of our control. And it just feels like each year we're having to work harder and harder to keep things running. And like I said, things just seem to be getting more and more difficult each time. It feels like we could really, really thrive as a small community where online shopping should be more difficult than local shopping, but things are put in place that make shopping locally just that much more difficult. I'm sure a lot of people from the outside would see it as on its knees. Being here day to day, we often do have busy spells and people do want to shop locally. The rent is very high in this street, the footfall is declining. Why would any new businesses want to set up here?
there are often calls for more well-known chains to bring their stores to Douglas. Insert the calls for Primark here. But would that actually increase footfall? Most, if not all, the big names have websites. And why would you brave the wind and the rain to go to a relatively small shop with a relatively small percentage of its stock when you could sit on your sofa in the warm and dry and browse its full range from the comfort of your own home? To me, that doesn't necessarily feel like the answer. Douglas needs to be able to offer something that you can't get anywhere else. And like Kieran said, it needs to be easier to go to Douglas and get something than it is to order it and get it delivered. The severe lack of independent shops in Douglas City Centre is proof of how tough it is to be successful as a small business there, and seems to reinforce the message that we've been hearing repeatedly for years now: use it or lose it. Erin is arguably the Isle of Man's hottest destination spot. And what I mean by that is it's the place we all go when the weather's nice. But I was curious to find out what it was like during the winter months. And I was greeted by very much a tale of two halves. I parked up on Station Road and popped into some of the shops along there, and it was really busy. So much so that none of them actually had time to stop for an interview with me. And I was really hopeful that I'd be able to share another surprisingly positive retail story for our island. But then I went round the corner, after obviously admiring the view for a little minute, and went up Church Road on the other side, and it was a very, very different story. Almost everyone I spoke to said the phrase, "It's been really hard." One shop owner described their situation as floating but not swimming. Anne has been running New Generation for nearly 30 years.
Mainly it's, well, you can see what it's like today. It's quiet, there's nobody here, and I think it's this side of the street. The other side, it's got the bus, it's got the train, and everybody comes in that way. This side, we haven't got anything, and there's no advertising telling people all the lovely shops that are around here. Before COVID, people didn't shop online, so we were busy. I employed two members of staff as well as myself here, but now we just run family, just do it, and we don't take a proper wage. We just, I wouldn't say we do it for the love, but we do, but we do it.
So what do you think the future is for the shop here?
I don't know, because I'm thinking of selling the business if I can in the next year, because my lease is up in April and I maybe take another year on to try and sell it. But you see, I need to retire. I'm 84.
No, you're not.
I am. So I really need to retire.
While Anne's reasons for wanting to sell up are mainly so she can have a very well-earned retirement, she's not alone in wanting to take a step away. Of the five businesses I spoke to on that side, four said they wouldn't be able to continue operating if things didn't improve, with two saying they'd already put feelers out about selling up. Hannah is the manager of S&M Harrison's Shoe Shop in Port Erin.
It's been quiet, very quiet. We've noticed a decline the last couple of years, and this year, Christmas, it's just not the same as it was. It hasn't been for a while. There's been several reasons. Lack of motivation for people to get out and shop local. We've had roadworks on our street. Parking's been closed off this past week. There's no enticement for people to come around our side of the street specifically because people don't think we're here, which has really had an effect on trade. The rise in pay that's going to go up next year, that's going to have a huge effect for us. We're a very small team. We have reduced our opening hours. We only have one member of staff in the shop at a time now. It used to be two members of staff. Every time that we adapt, but there's only so much adapting we can do before realistically we have to say this isn't a viable business anymore.
I'm Amy Griffiths, and now we're back in February 2026. I'm using this episode of Island Life to find out how all of this has caused the road to the final budget of this administration to be such a bumpy one. And while there are many challenges currently facing the retail sector on the Isle of Man, one of the key sticking points for many small businesses has been the minimum wage. Back in October 2021, a month after the last general election, Eyre and Michael member Alf Cannon was elected Chief Minister by his peers. 4 weeks later, he unveiled his priorities for his five-year term when he published the first draft of Our Island Plan. Health, the environment, and a diverse economy were named as some of his main focuses, as well as a commitment to moving the minimum wage towards parity with the living wage. Each year since then, the minimum wage has gone up in the hope of getting it closer to that living wage. In April 2021, the lowest amount an adult could be paid per hour on the Isle of Man was £8.25. It increased by roughly a pound each year, so that by April 2025, the minimum rate was £12.25. But with the living wage sitting at £13.46, this year there was set to be a big jump, a 9% jump in fact, so that government could meet the commitment it first made 5 years ago. And to say it didn't go down well with businesses would be an understatement. Quids Inn owner Andy Saunders, Brett Martin from the Local Economy Forum, and Rebecca George, Chief Executive of the Isle of Man Chamber of Commerce, shared their concerns with us at the time.
There are not many low-paying employers on the Isle of Man at all. Most people pay above minimum wage. But the issues on our island really come down to the fact that the government is taking so much money out of everyone's pockets. And it seems a backwards way of doing business is to take too much money out of businesses' pockets, out of our young people and working people's pockets, and then have to produce a benefit scheme for people and businesses to put some of that money, which the government has taken already, back into those businesses and people to keep them afloat. It would be far better, more sensible for the government to take less to start with and then not have to produce benefit schemes. Seems backwards, doesn't it? The two bits that the government can really get involved with there is on the cost of staffing and the cost of energy. It's the government that are causing the issues because they're taking too much out of the economy for themselves, really. I don't pay minimum wage, but all of my staff will expect an increase above the rate of minimum wage. And lots of people in the Isle of Man will be saying, well, I have qualifications that justify me earning more than a minimum wage. If we keep escalating the minimum wage at the rates it's going up, it's going to cause problems throughout the economy.
The general sense is the government doesn't get it. The other day, I think it was the Treasury Minister said that there's no evidence that minimum wage increases below 15% have any effect on employment. If you're actually in business, that's such a ludicrous thing to hear. I think generally people aren't looking for support packages. They don't want to be propped up. The support packages have been put in place because basically the government's setting the house on fire, and the support measure is a fire extinguisher. Well, don't set the house on fire in the first place is the answer, isn't it? Moderate the increase for businesses, but give the low paid what they need, which is a higher living wage.
The wage compression that will result if we go with a 9.9% rise is creating a rippling effect right across the economy. More and more businesses from various sectors really expressing their deep concern around this widespread compression. It causes structural risk. It causes risk to competitiveness, investment, and future jobs as well. What we're asking is that government should pause the 9.9% rise and reassess its true economic impact. I know that the Treasury Minister sort of says that he doesn't expect there to be job losses, but our feedback tells us a very different story. The 9.9% rise is pushing even those unskilled roles up into what we would class as skilled worker wages. We are not hearing that message from our employers and our businesses. What we're hearing is that this is going to cause some serious issues in unemployment across multiple businesses. And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5.
So last month, in a move that came as a shock to everyone, including the former Treasury Minister Alex Allenson MHK, Mr Cannon announced he was asking him to step down. In a letter Mr Cannon sent to Dr Allenson, he said it was with regret and to allow for a reset of our approach to the economy. Chris Thomas MHK was then asked to take on the role in his place, and on his appointment promised his priorities would be to address concerns surrounding the introduction of the minimum wage by taking a slower approach to the increase being proposed, and to work with officers to ensure there's a substantial rise in personal allowances at the budget. The next day, Mr. Cannon gave an urgent statement to Tynwald and also tabled an amendment proposing to reduce the speed with which the minimum wage increase was implemented. It was supported by his political colleagues, although notably not Dr. Allenson, meaning that the rate will now increase by 5% to £12.86 from April, rather than the previously proposed 9%. As well as the changes to the rollout of the minimum wage increase, Mr. Cannon's Tynwald amendment also agreed that a substantial increase in the personal allowance thresholds should be brought forward at the budget. We now know that it's not just a substantial increase, but what's thought to be the biggest increase ever. From April, personal income tax allowance will go up by £2,250 to £17,000 for individuals and £34,000 for jointly assessed couples. Now, what was unusual about these announcements is that the contents of the Pink Book are normally guarded with the highest level of security until the Treasury Minister gives their budget speech before Parliament. But with these Tynwald motions, everyone knew the two main points from this year's budget a month in advance. So why was it so important to this administration to make such a U-turn at this point? Mr. Thomas has been telling our political correspondent, Phil Gorn.
I think we began to feel a bit sad about ourselves, and this budget is about giving us confidence again. And everybody nearly will be approaching £500 better off after a personal tax allowance rise of £2,250. If you were on the minimum wage, you would have got more by having the minimum wage increase, but that seemed unaffordable in so many sectors. So what happened in January was we slowed down the increase in the minimum wage. We cancelled a generalised support package that had been proposed, which would have taken the reserves down by even more than not collecting tax from people. And we're hoping that those in combination, and we expect, in fact, that in combination that will give people confidence and we can attract investment. Ultimately, a brownfield site is an opportunity because it's somewhere that can be filled with economic activity. Ultimately, the fact that we need people to do the jobs and that people do seem to be moving here is an opportunity for us, and we've got to seize the day, seize the moment, and that's what this is, a budget of confidence.
The run-up to this budget has all been about the minimum wage. That's been the thing that everyone's been talking about. Now, in Tynwald, it felt like reassurances were being given that the increase in personal allowances would compensate for the lost income from the reduced minimum wage. That's not entirely the case, is it?
Well, in any economic situation, any social situation, there are all sorts of things that can happen. If you get a lower minimum wage per hour, but you're still in work, you're better off than hypothetically having had a higher minimum wage and not being in work. That's a really important point. If your hours are reduced so that you can stay in work and your hours are not now reduced, you're better off. If you're an entrepreneur, a small businessman running a business, and you stay in business and can employ people, you're better off. And that's what it was all about. Nobody thinks it's right for people to earn less, but there are more people who need to make a living in their households, and by that I mean the self-employed, the entrepreneurs, the people who employ people. You know, they need to have a fair income as well. So it was about rebalancing that, and we got it slightly wrong by having a minimum wage that was so much higher than that in England, and we got it wrong by such a large rise that we've slowed down that process. We were doubly wrong by thinking then of trying to target particular sectors with generalised expenditure of funds on particular projects. That really wasn't working, so that was the last straw, and that's why I came in, and I'm very pleased to be in government to try and rebuild confidence across the piece. And I'll say it again, that nearly everybody benefits from a personal tax allowance. It's not targeted just on people who would have been at the minimum wage, but although those people will benefit, the people who won't benefit are the tax cappers. Nothing's changed on the tax cap of this budget. They're still paying a huge amount of tax. The people who have their personal tax allowance taken away from them, the so-called tapered personal tax allowance group of people, and also people who are below the tax allowance won't benefit directly. But 3,600 people will actually be taken out of paying tax, which is, again, a huge number of people.
In every other respect, the contents of this year's budget have been fairly unremarkable. No big announcements, no plans for big projects, but just, to use government's own words, stability, security and confidence. However, it still wasn't brilliantly supported by Tim Wald.
Honourable members, we come to vote on this item. Item 2, the budget for the year 2026-27. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, please say no.
No.
Division called.
Extra end in the House, key 16, 4, 8 against.
Legislative Council, 5, 4, 2 against. Therefore, item 2 is carried.
Of the 32 members of Parliament with a vote, 10 voted against this year's financial plan, making it one of the most opposed budgets in Manx history. Despite that, though, it did still get an overall majority, so will now be enacted as laid out. Outside of Tynwald, there's been very little public reaction to the budget. While the slowing down of the minimum wage increase was lauded by many of the business owners on the island, only time will tell if it will be enough to appease government's critics as the island heads to its next general election in just 7 months' time. I'm Amy Griffiths and you've been listening to Island Life. You can listen back to this programme at manxradio.com or by subscribing to Manx Radio Podcasts using your usual podcast provider.